the announcement came right in the middle of the Archers, which was, of course, typical. There was not entirely coincidental storyline about impending war and what to do with the livestock if the bomb dropped. And all of a sudden, Charlotte Green's comforting recorded voice came on. "We interrupt this programme with an emergency announcement. Early warning systems have detected a number of nuclear missiles heading for southern England. Please retire to your fallout shelters with your radios and await further instructions." It was a feeling of relief more than anything, I suppose. After all, everyone had been talking about it and around it for so long. It had to happen sometime. Not that it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, exactly. It's just that things with the Americans had got so bad, there was really no way out of it. This is so... I wrote this 5 years ago. What is happening? Still, best to get it over with and just get on with your life, my mother always said. Or not, as the case might be. To be quite honest, it didn't make an awful lot of difference to me at my age, especially having lived through a war before. I was used to bombs and sleeping in the cellar and eating out tins and all that sort of thing. In fact, it was rather nostalgic for me. Brought the good old days flooding back, especially the tins of Spam. I had plenty of cans and boxes, cat food and people food, and enough Highland Spring to last 3 weeks. Even though it was generally agreed that 2 weeks was quite enough for the lethal radiation levels to drop. I hurried into the kitchen and scooped up Charles and Camilla, one under each arm. They yowled in surprise, then flopped obediently as I marched down the stairs to the cellar. I went back upstairs to collect my emergency survival bag, passport, spare reading glasses, £1,000 in 20s and my heart pills, and made it back down again with a minute to spare before the sirens started going off. The cellar was just as I'd left it. Camp bed, comfy chair, curtained off washing area, litter tray, a dozen Catherine Cooksons, nearly new from Oxfam, and one whole wall of food, water, batteries and other essentials. I sat on the chair with Charles and Camilla firmly clamped on my lap and closed my eyes. The wailing of the sirens took me right back to when I was a girl, sheltering in Aldwych Station as the Luftwaffe droned overhead. It was quite soothing, actually, and I nodded off with no trouble at all. I'll pass over the next fortnight on the grounds that it was extremely dull, and after the chemical toilet stopped working on day 10, rather unpleasant. Camilla and Charles kept me company, of course, but I must say that time dragged, rather. I missed my usual routines. Chatting with Elsie at Oxfam, visiting the day centre, pay what you can night at the Thai restaurant in the High Street. The little things. So, when day 14 came, I couldn't wait to get out of the cellar. The nearest thing I had to a radiation suit was a pair of salopettes from the 70s, one of Bernie's leather jackets, also from the 70s, and his old motorcycle helmet. I must have looked a right sight as I staggered out the front door into the dusty sunshine, but better safe than sorry, as Mother always said. The first thing I noticed was that there wasn't much damage at all to our part of London. Although I could see in the distance that both the Gherkin and the post office tower had crumbled, and most of the West End was a smoking crater. But there were really hardly any bodies in the street, and most of them were quite fresh. I suppose they were the impatient ones who'd sneaked out of their shelters early, hoping to be the first looters on the scene. They would have caught a lot of alpha and beta particles, depending on how long they left it. It wasn't a very nice way to go, but at least they weren't rotting yet. Camilla had elected to stay in the basement, but Charles followed close at my heels as I shuffled down the road, making for the corner shop. I still had plenty of Spam and beans left, but I fancied a bit of variety, and I was reasonably sure that pot noodles would taste the same whether they'd been irradiated or not. Also, needed some more cat food. And I was rather hoping that Mohammed would be able to tell me what was going on with the infrastructure, because if I couldn't get a bus to Boots to renew my prescription very soon, I was going to be in trouble. Unfortunately, Mohammed was dead, sprawled over the counter with his head stoved in. He looked like he'd been there for a day or two. Most of the cigarettes and batteries were gone from behind the counter, and all the whiskey, vodka and gin. I wondered where Mina and the children were. Still in their shelter, probably, waiting for him to come back. They'd be safer there. I checked my watch and quickly filled my shopper with cat food, jam and noodles, Charles licking desultorily at the congealed blood on the final floor stocking shelves. Then I hurried back as fast as I could to feed Camilla, whose yowls I could hear halfway down the street. I didn't want attention being drawn to my house, especially if there were gangs about. You can't be too careful. And besides, in times of desperation, people will eat anything, even cats. I discovered the reason for Camilla's strangled cries when Charles and I returned home. During our absence, she had given birth on the cat bed to six tiny sticky kittens who were already emitting high-pitched mews and tumbling about like weebles on the bed. Oh, that bloody vet, I told her. I'll have his guts for garters. He swore to me you'd been neutered. She just purred weakly. I gave Charles and Camilla their din-dins, spread some plum jam onto a hobnob, and settled down for a nap in the comfy chair. The kittens I decided to christen William and Harry, of course, Kate, George, Charlotte, and Simba. They grew at an alarming rate. Soon the corner shop ran out of cat food and I had to start giving my little royal family beans and Spam. Then the beans and Spam ran out and I was forced to start thinking seriously about how on earth I was going to get to the high street for more supplies without getting mugged or keeling over. The situation was rather urgent now, you see. I'd taken the last of my spare emergency-only heart pills several days ago, and if I couldn't get to Boots, things didn't look good for me. There were, needless to say, no buses. No change there, to be quite honest. So I stumped slowly down the street, trying the doors of all the cars. Bernie had taught me to hotwire our old VW in the 60s when he lost the key, and I hoped I still had the knack. The seventh car was unlocked, and after a bit of fiddling about, I got it started. It was only a 10-minute drive to the high street, but it was still very eerie not to see a single other car on the road all the way there. When I drove up and parked in front of Boots, I saw that the front windows had been smashed in. Lipstick and face cream lay scattered over the floor, but the entire snack section and the pharmacy at the back had been swept completely clean. In vain, I picked through the few intact bottles on the floor, but there was nothing of any use. Well, nothing for me and my heart. All gone to sell or trade or take. Paracetamol, oil of evening primrose, and Viagra were all that was left. That took him anyway, just in case. Oh, Charles, I said softly, we are in a bit of a pickle. The pickle got considerably worse as I drove back down along the high street assessing the damage. No shop was intact, not even the tanning salon, not even the undertaker's, although I suppose that made some sort of sense. The pet shop had burned down. The Budgeons was a wreckage of blood and broken glass, and even Holland and Barrett had been raided. The shelves of organic rice cakes and panda licorice bars standing clean and empty. No food anywhere, for cats or people. Charles and I drove back home in silence. 50 yards from the house, the car's engine gave out. Down in the cellar, I checked my dwindling stock of tins. Some chickpeas, A can or two of spinach and rather a lot of bird's custard. Nothing the cats would touch. Camilla, William and Simba wove themselves thickly between my legs, purring loudly, waiting to be fed. The little ones were nearly as big as their parents now, strong and hungry. I remembered something I'd read or seen years ago, a Cold War documentary which had mentioned some of the creatures that can survive nuclear aftermath with no ill effects. Cockroaches would be all right, I knew that much. And so would rats. I didn't recall them saying anything about cats. I suppose that cats could eat the rats eventually, but what if they couldn't find any? Or catch them if they did? What if they needed to build up their strength first, to be taught how to hunt? What would they live on till then? I was still pondering this dilemma as I finished a frugal meal of hobnobs and custard and reached to the bookshelf only to find that I had read my last Catherine Cookson. I stopped, staring at my hand. Old, gnarled and trembling, the veins raised over the bony knuckles, shiny and purple like worms. I suddenly felt breathless, and my heart started jumping and thudding. It felt like a pair of kittens was wrestling in my ribcage. And then I realised what was probably the best thing to do. What with my heart pills gone and boots cleaned out and the car broken down and the world ending and all. I put my warm cardi on because the evening was getting a bit nippy and the cellar always was rather damp. Then I poured myself a tot of brandy and took the bottle of little blue diamond-shaped pills out of my pocket. Not to be taken by persons with heart conditions, it said on the side, in large black letters. That will do, I thought, and downed five of them. As I waited for the pills to take effect, the cats gathered round me, leaping onto my lap, draping themselves over my feet, watching, waiting, purring, almost as if they knew. I was fairly sure it wouldn't take them too long to get the idea once I'd gone cold. As the only source of food in a hungry world, my body, scrawny though it was, would feed them all for a good few weeks, and that would give them an advantage out there against the rats and the cockroaches and whatever else had survived. I hoped my little ones all would find good homes. I comforted myself with the thought that people would need cats more than ever once they started rebuilding society, or whatever it was one did in a post-apocalyptic nightmare future, which I, for one, was rather glad I wasn't going to live to see. Waste not, want not, my mother always said. And I won't. And they shan't.